The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
I have the good fortune of not having anything on my mind. So, if some of you have any questions on your mind or comments, you're welcome to offer them and we'll see what happens. Maybe also say your name before you start. It'd be kind of nice to everyone to know.
My question is, in this practice of meditation, how important is posture?
In this practice of meditation, you mean this insight meditation or vipassana? Posture can be a great aid to the practice. And so it can be very supportive. But it's not required. When I've practiced in Burma, because of the kind of the social norms of how men and women were allowed to sit, were supposed to sit, you know, like the old days, women were not supposed to straddle a horse, but, you know, side saddle, right? And so it's kind of, I think it was kind of similar thing for women in Burma. They were supposed to meditate with one foot behind them, like this. So this. And so if you sit this way, and you get really open up and stretch, you can sit pretty straight. And this is also how you're supposed to listen to Dharma talks in Burma for everyone, men and women. What it does is that when I walked by the women's meditation hall, the doors were all open, lots of doors. Once the whole side was doors. There were 500 women sitting in there meditating, row after row. And I was so inspired. I thought it was one of the greatest sights of my life to see these 500 women sitting completely straight and upright, very dignified. It was great. The Burmese men didn't have to sit this way with their legs when they meditate. They could sit, you know, this way. They sat kind of like this. You know, kind of, and it wasn't particularly inspiring. But I think they got enlightened too. I think they practiced well. I mean, it had deep practice. And because what we're doing, in a sense, is relying on the power of the mind. But it's harder to marshal the power of the mind if we have really sloppy posture. It can be easier to engage the power of the mind when there's a... Because the mind-body are not so different, not so separate. Power of the mind, if we have a posture that supports that power, its strength. But it's also possible to overdo the emphasis on posture and get neurotic about it. And some people who come out of Buddhist traditions where posture is really important misunderstand why it's important. So like, you have a Zen background. They emphasize a lot about having a very particular posture. But it's not because you're supposed to be right. It's more like you're trying to marshal a certain kind of asana, a certain kind of power that comes from the posture. But every body's different. And so when they have one shoe fits all, it doesn't work. One posture is supposed to fit all, it doesn't work. But the principle of finding a posture that allows a certain kind of alertness, energy, power, strength, confidence, openness is the principle. And so then each person hopefully will find their own way to that in Zen practice. Does that address your question, or do you want to ask more? Maybe I missed kind of the point.
Well, I don't want to speak inappropriately. I was a little late arriving at the first session of sitting.
You're a little what?
I was a little late arriving at the 9:30 start, a little bit. So I looked around and were you sleeping?
Probably.
Oh. It looked like you were sleeping, so I felt, oh, it doesn't matter so much if I don't sit like this.
Sometimes I lean forward and kind of, if I'm nodding, then I'm really sleeping. But if I'm just leaning forward, sometimes I've gotten tired, and sometimes I've gotten very, very calm, very, very still. And that stillness, I'm still in touch with my body, but I'm not really holding it up anymore. And so which it was this morning, I can't tell you. I don't remember sleeping, but it could have been.
So I think that answers the question about that there is a correct posture or not. It's something else.
Yeah, it was correct on the inside.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much for those words before the walking meditation. That was very powerful. I'm just wondering, when, say, we start to fix things in our mind, you know, we're...
Can you turn it a little louder for Dan? I can't quite hear.
Okay. Is that better? I wanted to express my appreciation to you for the words that you gave us before the walking meditation. It's very powerful to think that we don't have to, in our minds, fix things and do all those things. In meditation, when we're doing that, we get caught up in that. What, because that can happen to me repeatedly, how can I detach? What are your thoughts about detaching from that so that it doesn't keep repeating itself?
Detaching from all the fixing? And
from the fixing, the need to think that I'm having conversations where I'm fixing things and...
I mean, one of the things you want to do is to bring your mindfulness, your attention, to really look carefully at what you're doing, what the fixing mind is like. What does it feel like when you're fixing? What does it feel like in the present moment to have these conversations that you're trying to do? What are the emotions that are present? What does it feel like in your body? So you want, almost like you can step back and step away from yourself and turn around and look back and see in present moment time, what is this phenomena like? What's going on here? Because it's easier to let go of things that you understand well. If you don't understand something, if you just have a vague idea, you don't want to do this and you should let go of it, then it's harder, much harder to let go. It's much harder to grow out of it. So I would take a little bit of time getting to know it better.
The getting to know wouldn't be about tracing back the origins of why. It has to do more with the present body state.
Right. See, in this practice, it's the present experience. It wouldn't be analyzing the background. Occasionally, that's useful to do, but I wouldn't do that in meditation. You could do that outside in different formats. And part of the advantage of staying in the present moment is that then you're getting the data, getting the evidence, the experience, to recognize in the moment how to relate to it all differently. So, for example, it's possible to go down the rabbit's hole of all the background, all the history of why we are the way we are, or it's possible to become so familiar with carrying on a conversation, you know, trying to have a better conversation and figure out the answer, that's so familiar with you, say, you realize, you know, this is a waste of time. You know, I'm tired of this, or this is not useful for me, or I didn't realize I do it so often and so much of my time. And I mean, it's reasonable to have some of these conversations in my head. but to do it, you know, 24 hours a day, you know, just all the time and going on for years now, you know, you kind of feel that how weary and tired the mind is. And it's possible to step back and say, you know, there has to be another way. I don't think I need to go back into the history of it. I can just step away.
And in the stepping away, then, do you return to the breath? Is that what helps to also distance?
There's a variety of ways, yeah. Some people find it very helpful to drop into the, stay with the breathing. It's a present moment experience. It takes you out of your thoughts, takes some of the energy away from wanting to think. Slowly the energy of thinking, the fuel of thinking dissipates, keeping you back to your breath. That's one way. The other way is to kind of in my vocabulary, you step away and turn around 180 degrees and look your thinking mind right in the eye. Okay, I'm going to look at you. I'm going to keep my eye on you, see, really see what's going on here. But to see it with a kind of clarity, I know what's happening now, but I'm not what's happening. I'm not my thoughts, but I'm looking at my thoughts. I'm looking at the phenomena of thinking as a present moment experience.
Thank you very much.
Does that make sense? Maybe one more?
I'm noticing lately feeling really sort of dragged around and exhausted by my own preferences in just, you know, in gross ways and, like, you know, views that I'm really, that are really easy to see, and, like, even the really small day-to-day, moment-to-moment decisions that I make based on, like, I wake up in the morning and I prefer this, I prefer that, and I prefer to do it this way and to see things like this. Even just the way I structure my day is just based on what I want. And there's a kind of tiredness that's coming with that.
Mm-hmm.
Just wondering ways of looking at that and ways of investigating that, because there's a lot of curiosity around, like, views and opinions and preferences and seeing all of that.
I'm not sure what to pick that up, the question, but it's. I'd rather ask you a question. What's the wisdom for you in seeing this phenomena, how it works? And what's the wisdom of getting tired of it?
I guess I hope that it'll teach me not to hold on so much. But...
And how might that operate? How might it help you not to hold on so much?
I mean, my sense is that the more intimate I am with the discomfort of being dragged around by my preferences, that naturally the mind will let go of some of that.
Mm-hmm. Great. So this is good news that you're feeling so bad. I think you really feel it well, and the fact that you can talk about it so clearly would indicate to me, suggest to me, that you're already becoming a little freer of it. You're not lost in it, or, you know, wallowing in it or something, and you have enough wisdom to know that this is not where you want to spend your time, what you want to do. So I think that's wonderful. I think that you're going in the right direction, and maybe you're right. Maybe you have to experience it more strongly. You have to really feel what a drag it is. And sometimes, there's not a better way.
Right, that I can't skip that step and go to what it's like to, you know, living my life without preferences. And how do you do it?
Right, so I think you have to really, really feel and be present for what is. And then, you know, so you don't know exactly what your process will be. If you do that, there's different avenues, different things that might unfold. And so by really being present for it and feeling it well and learning to be relaxed about it, that discomfort of it, your mind or your heart might take different routes in how to heal that or how to overcome it. Mm-hmm. And you'll discover what that route is in the process rather than someone suggesting something, telling you. Yeah, good. Great, well, thank you.